tonight. 16 degrees near Lake Michigan for the low, 10 degrees inland, and then partly sunny and 33 tomorrow. Right now, 15 degrees we're seeing in Kenosha, 11 for Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Wind chill is zero. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. WGTD News time coming up on 8:11. The Morning Show with Greg Berg up next.
Supporters of WGTD's morning show include the generosity of the family and friends of the late Frank and Beverly Falduto, two lifelong Kenoshans who devoted much of their lives to the community in general and to WGTD in particular. Mr. Falduto played an essential role in creating WGTD nearly 40 years ago and later served as station manager and occasional morning show co-host. And we welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD-HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. On today's program, we're going to be celebrating a great anniversary, the 40th anniversary of the spectacular madrigal feast here in Kenosha, known as Ye Olde English Christmas Feast. We're going to be hearing from a couple of the current directors, from several students involved, and from the man who started it all 40 years ago, Kurt Chalgren. First, a little music. Here are some of the students involved in this year's Ye Olde English Christmas Feast.
Sing, my friends, and may you have joy and mirth and joy again. Lo, he lives, the King of Heaven, now and evermore. Amen. Christ is born in Bethlehem. Christ the Lord Emmanuel. And
that beautiful, skillful, expressive singing is courtesy of the Ye Olde English Christmas Feast, one of the grandest, most splendid holiday traditions here in Kenosha, and a tradition which reaches the milestone of its 40th anniversary this year. The Ye Olde English Christmas Feast is a collaboration between the three major high schools of Kenosha Unified, that is, Bradford, Tremper, and Indian Trails High Schools. And at the helm, particularly in the matters of the music that is part of this, are the three choral directors of those three high schools. And with me is Polly Amborn from Tremper, John Che from Indian Trails. Brad Mann is from Bradford, but is in the other room, busy leading rehearsal on this snowy Monday night. But we have Polly Amborn and John Che to give us their perspective from the director's chair, so to speak, of Ye Olde English Christmas Feast and this splendid 40th anniversary edition of it. We welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thank you.
So we're not too far from actually opening night. I should think this is an interesting place to be. I'm feeling good, feeling excited, still feeling, I suppose, a little scared about certain details.
Well, with Thanksgiving break coming up, we only have one rehearsal this week. Normally we rehearse twice a week for 3 hours each night, and so we've been a little short on rehearsals lately with a lot of students involved in the recent high school theater festival, and so we're happy to be together tonight despite the weather. But yes, we're excited, and it's getting close, so it's getting very real now.
Right. So 40 years this has been going on, so how long have each of you been part of this? Polly, as long as you've been at Tremper, I assume?
Yes, this is my 13th feast.
I believe this is my fourth year.
Oh, so you're the newbie, the new kid on the block, so to speak.
Very new.
Polly, maybe you could give us at least a little bit of historical perspective, whatever you happen to know about how this got off the ground. I would think in large part due to the good work of your predecessor at Tremper, Kurt Chalgren.
Absolutely. Kurt, with a couple other community members, founded the feast back in May of 1975, and it was a springtime thing, but quickly became a winter or a Christmas feast, and it's been held in a number of different venues, the Elks Club and St. Mark's, and for the last, well over 15 years, has been here at Tremper in the cafeteria. It just turned out to be a little bit easier logistically. It's perhaps not as wonderful acoustically, but it works out pretty well, and we're pretty proud that we're able to host it here. We've had people that have been with the feast for, you know, just a couple years, and people that have been with the feast for well over 20, 25 years in areas of costuming and technical work and background help. So it's got a huge history of volunteerism beyond all the music making.
When did it become a collaboration between multiple high schools? Do you happen to know?
I don't.
As long as you've been around?
Oh, easily, yeah. But Tremper began on its own, and then I believe it was probably about 18 years ago that Bradford got on board, and then 4 years ago when Indian Trail became comprehensive that they got on board as well. So it's a good thing.
I should think that one of the really exciting aspects of it, even though that's not the way it was 40 years ago, is that it's one more opportunity for students from various high schools to get together and collaborate. And I suppose that happens in other ventures, but this is probably one of the best examples of that kind of cooperation and collaboration.
There's so many rivalries that go on with sports and athletics and things like that. You have an opportunity to bring kids together just in Kenosha for Kenosha high school students' sake and music's sake, as opposed to a competition between one another. They get to collaborate. They get to get knowledge from three different directors every single rehearsal, and so the kids get better. They get to know each other really well. They get to know the directors really well. We get to know them, and it's a wonderful collaboration for the adults as well as the students.
And really stop to think about that you get to work with not only some of your own Indian Trail students who are part of this, but some of Poly students, some of Brad students from the other schools as well. So what an enrichment for you as a teacher.
Oh, it's so much fun. Absolutely.
Cool. Polly, how does this get paid for? And what sort of a huge budgetary undertaking is this? And who keeps track of all that?
Well, there is really no budget for the feast. It is completely self-sustained. And so the money that we make from tickets and donations is what sustains us. And a lot of people, when they see that $30 ticket or that $35 ticket, think that we must be making money hand over fist. But there was one year that we made $26 total. And that was an actual figure. We barely make it because we're doing an 8-course catered meal, and certainly we have to pay the caterer and all of her staff that come in and work so hard for us. We're dealing with handmade costumes made out of velvet and satin and very expensive things that certainly we use more than once, but they need repairs, they need updating. And so it's a very tight budget that we have, and we're very grateful that we have opportunities sometimes to sing out in the community, and we get donations from that and various things, but it's pretty much self-reliant.
How much does it change year to year, or in what ways does each feast change? I mean, this year versus last year versus the year before, or is it essentially the same experience?
A lot of it can be the same in terms of some of the layout and some of the costuming things, but we do add some things from time to time, and we take some things out from time to time. Sometimes the food is even a little bit different, which you've had in the past few years. Obviously, every group is always different from year to year. You can have many of the same members, but the group dynamic is completely different, so you hear a different kind of sound, a different kind of energy from night to night, and it definitely changes from night to night also, as well as from year to year. So, but with the different acts and the different people that are involved, and more people are getting involved, it is different from year to year.
This is obviously an exceptionally difficult kind of repertoire. It's madrigals that can be extremely complex and intricate, and all a cappella, so you have no accompaniment to sort of lead you along and keep you in tune and so on. Do you have singers who come into this as newcomers, not really understanding that, not really understanding the gauntlet that this represents, or by and large is this sort of one of those legendary undertakings where most people know one way or another that when they are a part of this, they're a part of a very serious undertaking?
I think a lot of them have an idea that it's serious, but until they're faced with that big thick folder of music and all that has to be memorized, they don't understand how much it is. And then when we break them off and we're not singing in sections anymore and they're singing scrambled, as we call it, in quartets, and they realize not only do they have to know the music memorized, but they have to be able to carry it all on their own. And the kids that are in the group more than 1 year feel so much more confident the second year, because there's some repertoire that we do every year that's repeated and tradition and part of the feast and referring to various, you know, parts of the food aspect. But then there's a set of madrigals and a set of more Christmassy pieces that are brand new every year. And so I think when they, you know, start to look at the sheer volume of music that they have to learn and learn really well, it is pretty daunting. But most of them stick with it, and hopefully through just the hours and hours of practice, feel like they've got it in place.
I have to say, I'm astonished that there are this many high school students that want to do this. I mean, in terms of who want to undertake 6 hours of extra choral rehearsal every week on top of their other rehearsals and on top of all the other things that they do, and singing all this music from the Renaissance, which, I mean, for a serious musician, a serious singer, can be really fun and satisfying. But nevertheless, in this day and age that we live in, are you surprised at all that there are so many young people that are excited to do this? I mean, who line up and want to undertake this?
Historically, it has this prestige to it that, right, that some of the top singers in this community, high school singers, want to be part of. And second, it's amazing how good music really just is immortal. It never dies. And kids that sing at that level, and even at any level, with faced with that amount of work and that kind of music, is that, you know, it still is exciting. Even being hundreds and hundreds of years old, it lives on forever. And there's a reason why it's lasted this long and why it's still done. And there's a reason why even high school kids can intellectually think about these things and make some really, really great music, even though it's daunting and it's older and it's not popular to say.
Right. But you look at their faces and you see this joy and excitement and deep sense of satisfaction and pride in a job well done. It's just really exciting. It gives you hope for the future of the world that there are this many young people who want to do this. Beyond the madrigal singers, of course, themselves, there are a whole lot of other people who are involved, including students. And in fact, Mr. Che, I know you've been at work someplace else here at Tremper tonight, working with other people who are part of the feast. Who are you working with, for instance, just now?
Well, each week, directors, we take turns every single week working with this group, and it's the Lord's Ladies. And they were involved with the feast a number of years ago, and they had stopped for a while, and then recently, with the addition of Indian Trail to the Madrigal Feast, we had the Lord's Ladies because we had so many talented students that we wanted more to get involved and wanted to find a way to get some of them involved. So they're very talented women singers, and we rehearsed a set of madrigal music and Christmas music, maybe not as many tunes as the madrigal singers would, but they take part in two sets, and then they take part in the carols at the very end. And so, I mean, they get the same work with the three directors too, and they rehearse once a week, a little bit less because they have a little less music to do. But
okay,
still, Renaissance, a lot of the Renaissance music, as well as some carols and things like that, more familiar Christmas tunes that are arranged, and it's still as a cappella, maybe with a violin to give a little additive to it, but that's about it.
Cool. And then in addition to the singers, I know there's other participants as well, such as?
Well, we have Irish dancers, we have recorder players, we have a brass ensemble, we have string ensembles. We rotate those through the school's various years. We have a drama piece every year that's directed here by Nick Cicerelli from Tremper. We have all the pages and wenches who are the serving people. They have a huge role. We have the jesters, who are absolutely hysterical and work incredibly hard to bring a very fun, light time to the feast, but also has some very poignant moments as well. So when you count all the students together, we're probably near 200, depending on the night and what's all going on.
Wow. Has the feast changed very much in, for instance, the 13 years that you have been part of it?
Logistics, hugely. In 2010, we had to rebuild the entire set because they remodeled the cafeteria here at Tremper. So everything that was had been had to be reinvented. So that was logistically a huge change. The script has remained very much the same. The late Terry Lawler was very integral in writing the script, and it's some beautifully written words that now our Lord High Chamberlain Brian Lynch brings to us every year. So a lot of the script has stayed the same. We change maybe the order of the acts based on need or certain, you know, songs that we're doing, but it's a lot of the same stuff, but everyone enjoys it. Hmm.
Any musical highlights that you would want people to be listening for if they come to this feast this year, for instance?
Well, over the summer, we had a little very loose voting opportunity for people for their favorite pieces that they've done, because knowing it was the 40th year. And so some of the resounding favorites were a piece that's actually not a Renaissance madrigal, but it sounds an awful lot like one called When Alan and Dale Went a Hunting. And it's kind of a story, and it's very fun. That was one of the top vote getters. Another is a Christmas piece called Turo Luro Luro. And it tells the story of Mary looking for a place to stay, but it's wonderful and very difficult. But the kids love to sing it. And another wonderful madrigal in These Delightful Pleasant Groves. Mm-hmm. So some of these are the top 40 of the madrigal feast, and then all of the ones that we always do, the 12 Days of Christmas, which is acted out by the jesters, and some things like that we've done, I think, every single year.
Wow. You have a favorite, Mr. Che?
I love watching the 12 days of Christmas. Just the jesters are, just see what they do new every single year. It's hysterical just to watch them, and watch the kids sing because they have such a great energy with the jesters and with the song and with the soloists and things like that.
Once upon a time, when you yourselves were students, were you a part of madrigal feasts at your respective schools?
I was involved in the feast at Horlick High School. And that was back in the mid-80s, and they're still doing a feast today. That's changed a lot, too, but, yep, that's where I started.
Hmm. We didn't have anything like that in high school. And in college, that was one of the groups, but I was in the orchestra, so I didn't get to sing with that group. So, but they did a dinner every year, and it's quite a bit different than it is here. I mean, I know I've been to Horlick, and that's quite a bit different also. So. Mm-hmm.
This has kind of a special spirit and mystique all of its own, and it must be very gratifying to be part of it. And it's been a long journey. I mean, the rehearsals, I understand, begin back in September.
Yep.
Right?
Auditions are last spring. We do the auditions in May or June, and then the kids know that when the fall starts, we're ready to get started, and costuming begins, and rehearsals begin, and there's no turning back.
Wow. Well, congratulations to the two of you and your colleague Brad Mann, and to, I'm sure, what is a small army of adult volunteers behind the scenes helping to coordinate all this. Yep. And, of course, congratulations to the present singers and all the singers who have come before to bring the Ye Olde English Christmas Feast to its 40th anniversary year. My thanks to both of you for joining me today on The Morning Show, Polly Amborn and John Che.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Like a
We certainly couldn't have a meaningful conversation about the great Madrigal Feast here in Kenosha without talking to at least some of the students that are involved, because without their talents and beautiful voices, this would just be a lot of empty space in front of beautiful scenery. But it's the students, the singers, who actually make this such an amazing event, as they have for the last 40 years. I'm really pleased to have three of this year's students participating in this year's Ye Olde English Christmas Feast. We have with us Rebecca Willer, who is a senior at Bradford, Ariana Voiles, who is a senior at Indian Trails, and Nathan Bianan, who is a junior at Tremper. So all three of the high schools that are involved in the Madrigal Feast are represented in this trio of students, and they are just the tip of the iceberg. Actually, what are the numbers? I mean, how many singers are involved in the feast this year, or even roughly? Dramatic pause for effect.
I think it's like
it's 28. It's 28 per night. 28 per night.
It's like 12 from each school.
And then 12 off nighters. So there's about
30.
Yeah, roughly 35, 36.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. And that's just the singers who actually sing the madrigals. And then in addition, there's all this other commotion and involvement involving other students. And I know, Ariana, you've been, ahead of becoming one of the singers, have been involved in one of these other roles. So tell us about the lords and ladies that are also part of this.
Yes, well, my sophomore year, I was asked to be a lord's lady, and that was cool for me because I got to experience the feast without actually being a part of it for the main attraction. And it got me to appreciate the music and all the time and effort that the madrigal singers put into it, and I got to be behind the scenes and experience a little bit what the page and wenches do. I got to see the different acts being put together at the end, and it was a good way to start out. And then the next year, I was really excited to go into the actual madrigals, and it's been a journey ever since, and cool. I'm really excited.
Cool. So what do the lords and ladies do? Do you serve any really specific function, or are you more like extras in a movie?
In a way, we are extras. We're like a side attraction for in between madrigal set and Christmas set. They'll have the lords ladies come in. It's about 12 girls that will perform, and we just sing five or six songs, not anything really big.
So you are actually singing, mm-hmm. though?
Yeah, they're short songs.
Okay, and not quite the intricate madrigals that are part of all this.
No.
Right. So maybe we could just find out a little bit about what draws all of you to do this, because it's a huge time commitment. In fact, Rebecca, you're the grizzled veteran here, having been a part of the madrigals for 3 years now, so you know better than anybody how much time this is involves. I mean, when did you and your fellow singers begin work on this year's feast?
We started working on this feast late September. Earlier September. And yeah, it's twice a week from 6:30 till 9 or 9:30. And it's a lot of time and effort. And I think for me, why I love doing madrigals so much is because it's difficult music and it takes a lot of time and it is really hard and it is frustrating. But at the end, when you get to put together such a beautiful piece of music with such intricate harmonies and, you know, tempo changes and things, that's the fun of it, is making this really difficult music sound beautiful and portraying a period of time where not many people sing music from. I mean, we sing, you know, modern music, but not many people sing madrigal music.
Right.
That's
we don't
so
always,
fun.
Yeah, we don't always go back to the Renaissance.
Yeah.
And of course, the fact that it's all unaccompanied makes it especially,
even more fun.
Yeah, well, and especially challenging to put that
Definitely.
Together. So twice a week, 3 hours a shot, so
yes.
6 hours a week.
Right.
And this is outside of the other choirs that you are a part of.
Yep.
Oh my
yes.
gosh. Nathan, for instance, I know you're a very active athlete in addition to being a really good singer. So how in the world do you even squeeze this into this? I mean, September is still football season, for instance. I mean, how do you mold this on top of that?
It gets kind of tiring because you go from, like, practice straight to Bradford, and then you just sing, and then you have to eat somewhere in between, like, while you're driving there or eat while you're rehearsing. But I mean, it's worth it. Like, because it's really fun and it's interesting to see, like, the contrast of, like, oh, like, these are all the people that, like, I interact with in football, and then these are the people I interact with in madrigals, and there's, like, a stark contrast between the two.
I should think. And it works. And to you, it's worth the time.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow, cool. Ariana, I know that you're your younger brother Austin, I almost said little brother, he's not so little, but I know your younger brother Austin is also part of the feast. I should think that's cool. Any other Voileses have been in the
Yes, mix? Actually, my second youngest sister, Annalise, she's a junior this year. She's involved in the feast as well as a magical singer. So we only have Autumn, which is Austin's twin, that's not in the feast this year, but she'd like to participate someday.
Wow, mm-hmm. That's really, really cool. So describe what these rehearsals are like, 3 hours at a shot. I mean, first of all, are all three choir directors from the three high schools sort of sharing that directorial load? And
yes, definitely. They all three, Indian Trail, Bradford, and Tremper choral directors are working together to put together the magical feast. And we start out rehearsals jumping right into the music. We'll focus on the song and run it a bunch of times and split off into different parts, so soprano, alto, tenor, bass, and we just put it together as we go along. And
what's really cool is with having three different choir directors is the fact that they all look for different things. So Miss Amborn might pick out, you know, some of the diction things, but you know what I mean? And one of the teacher choir directors might look for the emotion behind it. And so when you have three different teachers, you have three different, you know, opinions, and therefore you get the best music possible because you have so many contrasting opinions coming in to make one song.
They're kind of like Simon, Paul, and Randy, I think.
Yeah.
The three of them, kind of, in the best way possible.
Or are you talking about judges on American
Idol? The judges, yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Took me a second to process what you were talking about. Right? Or it'd be like three coaches, I suppose, who have, you know, various perspectives and various areas of expertise.
It also helps that they're three different voice parts, so like Mr. Che, he's really good at hearing tenor because he's so used to singing tenor, so he really understands the part. Mr. Mann sings bass, and Mrs. Amborn sings alto, and there isn't really a soprano, but soprano has melody most of the time, so it's just easy to hear that. So they can really pull apart music.
And we don't need a director to sing our part.
So independent. That's right. So humble. So like each of them is apt to pick up on certain errors that a particular part is making. I suppose when you get to this point, we're recording this interview not too long before the feast actually gets started. I mean, you're to the point where, I mean, we were just listening to you sing, and it's already sounding absolutely wonderful. It's in the polishing phase now. But I should think back in September or early October, it's probably not quite as fun because it doesn't sound quite as good. I mean, how frustrating is it and how difficult is it to get this kind of challenging music really put together?
So at the beginning, we'll just go over something. Like, we rapidly go through all of our music, like, as fast as we can. We're just like, okay, this is what it's supposed to sound like, and then we go through all of that, and then we just run it time and time again. And then we go on retreat, and then at retreat is when they're really like, oh, you guys should start putting your music down. You should start trying to memorize these things, and we run these things a million times. We go through every single night, and whether you're on or you're off, you're sitting there and you are going through the part in your head, you're singing the words, like you need to start memorizing all of it. And then we come back, and pretty much most of the time after retreat, is most of that is just polishing so that we can get it to be like exceptionally good for what we're supposed to be.
Yes, and our magicals, it also brings in different cultures because we sing songs from different languages, so it exposes us to that cultural difference pertaining to the magical music, so it's nice for us to have that diversity too.
Wow. So you're mastering different languages and even different styles within this tradition of madrigals. Wow. How many parts does it split up in, the most intricate pieces?
Well, we have a song that is Masters in this Hall. How many guy parts are there?
There are four guy parts.
Four guy parts. So that's pretty unheard of, and that's pretty intricate. And at any time, there's probably maybe six, if you would count, like, second sopranos and second altos or something. So, yeah, at any time, like, there's normally four, but sometimes one of those four parts will split off into another part, so you might have six or eight parts singing at one time.
Wow. We're saying something about how there's this many singers, but this many sing each night. So not everybody sings every night. Are you always singing with the same group? I mean, like the group that I was hearing tonight, will they always be singing together as a unit?
Well, there are four nights. There's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And each night is a separate set of people. So, like, Thursday night will always be the same amount of number of people and the same people. Mm-hmm. But the Thursday night is different than Friday, which is different than Saturday, which is different than Sunday. So no one night is the same.
Ah, it's okay. All based on balancing the voices. So Mr. Mann does a good job of picking out the seating charts and everything, and he really focuses on trying to get the balance throughout all the parts.
Hmm. So how many nights will each of you sing then?
Normally it's three for like returning people. So some of our newer like altos, for example, might have two nights, but mm-hmm. for most returners it is three nights.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How much does the feast change year to year, both in terms of repertoire and also in terms of what happens? I mean, if somebody went to the feast 3 years ago, is there a reason for them to go this year? What is different or fresh about it?
The music changes from time to time. There are songs that continue on traditions such as Wassail or Here We Come A-Wassailing, or usually
Hall.
Deck the Hall. Christmas carols are repeated every year, but they get a different Lord and Lady of the Feast, sometimes different little acts they put on. They had that theater thing they did last year, which is different from the one that they're doing this year. They had tumblers, and now they have Irish dancers. It changes, but it's relatively along the same lines, and it's the tradition that makes
right.
it all worth the while.
Very good. So, Rebecca, this is your third and final Ye Olde
yep.
English Christmas Feast. So is this a terribly bittersweet experience or not so much?
I would say so. Madrigals has been a huge part of my life, and I've always looked forward to doing it every year. So it's going to be sad not being able to sing next year, because I don't know if I'll have this opportunity to sing this, you know, Renaissance music again. So it's kind of sad.
Right. It's hard to know. I mean, there are certainly groups out there that do it, but
right.
it's hard to know if you'll be someplace where there is such
exactly.
a group.
Exactly.
So. But I certainly hope you will have the opportunity to do this. And Ariana, it must be a really special experience for you to be able to share this with some of your siblings.
Yes, definitely. We were so excited to be all put on the same night. We all perform on Friday, which is really
aww.
Cool. So my mom and some of my family is coming in to see it, and it's nice because we have a special connection, and to sing this music together, it's very nice.
Absolutely. And Nathan, I know that there have been other Bianans who've been a big part of the choral program here at Tremper, so do you have older brothers who have been part of this?
Yeah, both of my older brothers have been in Madrigal Feast, and we'll joke around with each other because we all know the parts to like Here We Come A-Wassailing and Deck the Halls and stuff like that. And we'll just randomly start singing them at my house. And my mom will get thrown off by it, but we'll just be like, oh, we got this.
Right. And you have a younger brother, I think, right?
No.
Oh.
I wish I did.
So you're the caboose for the Bianans. Oh boy. Was it just a foregone conclusion you were going to do this? I mean, did it just go without saying you would try to do this?
Kind of. My mom was sort of like, well, Nathan, all your brothers did it, so you're going to do it. And I was like, okay, but I'm pretty glad that she did. Because, I mean, like, I probably would have done it anyway.
But now, no regrets,
yeah.
now that you're in the thick of it. Well, we are looking forward to it in this 40th anniversary season. I imagine they've made a big deal about that
mm-hmm.
this feast
yes,
needs to be
definitely.
Something extra special.
Most definitely.
Well, from what I can tell, it's going to be. And I thank each of you for joining us to kind of share your thoughts on being part of this. Rebecca Wheeler from Bradford, from Ariana from Indian Trails, and Nathan from Tremper. My thanks to all three of you, and have a great feast. You are listening to The Morning Show on WGTD-HD, your gateway to public radio. And I am really glad that, in a sense, we've saved the best for last, at least in some respects, especially when it comes to understanding the rich history of Ye Olde English Christmas Feast, the 40 majestic years of this spectacular event. I am so pleased to have with me right here in the studios of WGTD, Kurt Chalgren. For many years, the director of choral activities at Tremper High School and the man who started Ye Olde English Christmas Feast 40 years ago. And as a matter of fact, Mr. Chalgren has been invited back to play a role in this year's Ye Olde English Christmas Feast. He will actually be doing some singing, joining some of the young men for one of the performances. Ye Olde English Christmas Feast is coming up not this weekend, but the following weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
And I'm really happy to have this opportunity to speak again with Kurt Chalgren. I have fond memories of year after year doing morning show interviews with Mr. Chalgren about the Ye Olde English Christmas Feast way back when. So here we are in brand new studios that I don't think you've ever seen before. Kurt Chalgren, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thank you, Greg. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm honored that you invited me to come. We used to do these all the time.
I remember very, very well. And I remember for just a couple of different reasons, it logistically wasn't possible for me to get to the feast for a number of years. I bet we did four or five of those interviews before I finally got to experience one in the flesh. It's a busy season, of course, but I'm so glad that I did, and my wife Kathy and I have enjoyed the feast from time to time and look forward to going to one of the performances again this year in this banner 40th anniversary year. Ahead of us talking about you starting the feast, had you personally been a part of a madrigal feast, either as a high school student or college student? I mean, did you come into the creation process, so to speak, with any firsthand experience?
I had no firsthand experience in either madrigal singing or madrigal dinner performance. I'd wanted to do one for a lot of years. And then in August of 1975, I attended a seminar, a workshop in South Holland, Illinois, at Thornton Community College. And they gave us a loose-leaf notebook full of ideas and suggestions and everything. I did not do the balloon-blowing tying into the animals thing, but we did many of the rest of the things. And when I came back, I felt I could do it now. I wasn't afraid anymore. I could do it because I had all the preparation. And so I went to the principal and the superintendent and Ralph Houghton, the director of music at the time, got their approvals, and then I went down to the Elks Club, which was, in my opinion, the best place to perform it. It was, the Elks Club at that time was the grand dame of social life in Kenosha. And Ron Slatt was the manager of the Elks Club. I told him what I wanted to do, a 9-course Renaissance festival banquet, with jesters and jugglers and acrobats and fencers and magicians and brass players and string players and recorder players and madrigal singers and entertainment, drama, dancing, and singing as would be fit a Renaissance program. And I told him what I wanted for the dinner. I wanted wassail. I wanted salad greens without tomatoes because there were poison apples in the Renaissance. Mm. Think of Sleeping Beauty. Mm. Beef barley soup. I wanted a whole smoked trout on every table. For poultry, I wanted Cornish hens. For the meat course, either roast beef or roast pork. And then cheeses, fruits, and nuts platter following the main course. And then flaming plum pudding to knock it all off. And so he said, well, give me a little time. I'll go back and talk to my chef, and we'll see what we can do. And he was gone a long time. I told him I wanted to do it for $10 a ticket, $5 to the Elks Club, and $5 to Tremper. And he was gone a long time. He came back. He said, we can't do it for $5. I said, oh, really? I'm disappointed. I said, what's the catch? Can we modify it somehow? He said, well, nuts are just too expensive. We can't do it with nuts. So from then on, we did cheeses and fruits and no nuts.
You could live without the nuts
and
if you got everything.
Absolutely. Yeah. They could do it for $5 a ticket if we did it without nuts. And in those days, I mean, 40 years ago, in 1975, $10 in Kenosha was an expensive meal. Hmm. You could go to the Bartley House and get a less expensive meal than $10 in those days. Hmm. So we were very fortunate. Howard Brown, in an editorial in the Kenosha News, his Kenosha News, said the next day after he attended that Kenosha is no longer a brown bag lunch town.
When you have the feast.
That was really a compliment, I thought.
Now, how readily was, for instance, your principal at the time or Mr. Houghton or the superintendent, I mean, those figures, how readily open were they to this possibility? And my second question right after it is, what about the students, many of whom, maybe all of them, at that point, knowing nothing about what this newfangled madrigal feast even was going to be? I mean, did you have to kind of put on your famous Kurt Chalgren charm or Kurt Chalgren muscle and make this happen the first year, or were people swept up in your own enthusiasm?
I think some of all of the above. John Hosmanic was principal at Tremper High School at the time, and to his credit, he was such a fine principal. You come to him with an idea, and he just trusts you. He just knew that you'd thought it through and were intelligent enough to figure out all the details, and it was a good idea. So he said yes immediately. Superintendent said yes, and Ralph Houghton said yes, but don't expect to get any money for it. And I said, okay. So the first year we'll probably lose $2,000. The second year we'll break even, and the third year we'll make $2,000 to repay that $2,000 from the first year. He said, no. Hmm. As Ralph could do, he said, you'll break even the first year. So we did a fundraiser. The choirs sold candy bars or something that year, and we paid for the feast, and it ended up making a little profit to go into the next year.
At that point, 40 years ago, how long had you been at Tremper?
That's a really good question. I'm proud to answer. Ralph Houghton hired me when I was 24 years old. Had 2 years of experience in Iowa at Iowa Central Community College, and he hired me to teach at Tremper when it was a year and a half old. The building was a year and a half old. It opened on December 7th in 1964, and I came in September of 1966.
So roughly 8 or 9 years then, had you been the teacher then for this 40th anniversary, or for the first feast?
Sure, between 66 and 75. And you asked about the students. Early on, I mean, very early on, probably my first year, we had mandrigal singer groups, who sang a piece for WSMA contest in the spring. At one point, we had 4 mandrigal singer groups, and they all sang in Class A and all got ones, and it was just a really fun time. Probably the most hectic time was when we had the Choraliers, which was a Pops-type show choir group, and many of those same kids sang in the Madrigal Singers, and we had 3 different shows during the Christmas season. They had their regular Pops show, Broadway tunes. They had a Christmas show for the Pops group, the show choir, and then the Madrigal Singers, and they had 3 different costumes that they wore.
Wow.
One day, may have been a Saturday, we did all 3 shows in both Racine and Kenosha and did about 7 shows in the same day. And at the end of the night, I said, is this what we really want to do? And they said, no, it's too busy. It's too exhausting. We can't do this anymore. And when it came to a time to decide between the show choir or the Madrigal Singers, they chose the Madrigal Singers because of Ye Olde English Christmas Feast.
Wow. That's so cool, and it comes back to a point I made to the teachers and in a sense with the students too, the fact that, we automatically assume that if you're a high school singer, you'd rather sing Winter Wonderland than sing some madrigal from several hundred years ago, but a really skilled, serious singer, in fact, just eats up this kind of repertoire. So your singers already were well-versed in the art of the madrigal even before Ye Olde English Christmas Feast was created.
To an extent, yes. I do think that what Polly and John and Brad are doing now is wonderful. The fact that all 3 directors are working with students from all 3 high schools, and I'm so pleased that it's been going for 40 years. Who would have thought in 1975 that I'd be alive at this point in time, let alone the feast would still be going.
Right.
And they have taken it and run with it. They've made some changes, but basically it's the same. It's nearly the same menu, and it's the same format with 3 sets of music. The liturgy, quote-unquote, which is pretty much the same year to year with the processional and the Boar's Head Carol and 12 Days of Christmas and so forth, stays the same. The madrigal set changes each year. All the music from the Renaissance madrigals is performed then, sometimes Spanish, sometimes English, sometimes Italian, sometimes Latin, sometimes French. And then the set that's a Christmas set is also Renaissance music, 16th century music, but it's Christmas 16th century music, so therefore it's sacred. So they get the secular and they get the sacred. The madrigals were really the pop tunes of the 16th century, you know. It's after dinner entertainment. And if you were a Renaissance person, you could read music, you could sing, you could dance, you could play an instrument, you could fence, you could go falconry, you could do all of those things, which the nobility did. Mm. And go ahead.
I'm just going to ask this from the very beginning, if I remember your description correctly, you had also all of these other elements in place, or many of them. I mean, it wasn't just a big meal and these madrigal singers, but a lot of other students involved in other capacities. How difficult was it? I mean, I can see how your madrigal singers were probably really excited, even if they didn't maybe exactly understand what a madrigal feast was or madrigal dinner. But what about somebody you tried to recruit to be a fencer or a juggler or an acrobat or a jester or to play one of these other roles we might think of as a little more peripheral? I should think the typical Tremper student in 1976 had no idea what you had in mind.
That's probably true to an extent, except the faculty was an outstanding faculty, and I'd go to people that I knew had expertise in certain areas, and they jumped in wholeheartedly. Our first Lord High Chamberlain was a math teacher who was a theater minor, and so I asked him to be the Lord High Chamberlain. Jack Buzzard was his name. And when I came to wonder what kind of language to use in the printed materials, like the program, for instance,
to make it feel authentic.
Right. I went to Bev McKenzie, who was on the English faculty and was really quite an authority on Chaucer and Middle English. And I said, well, what do I do to make this language look like Middle English, 16th century? She said, just put an E on the end of every word. So that's why it's ye old Englishy, Christmassy, feasty, and it's sort of stuck. We sort of are akin to the Bristol Renaissance Fair. Hmm. Here's the differences that I in my own mind denote. The Bristol Renaissance Fair is really a peasant festival, a village festival that the court people come to. And the Old English Christmas Feast is really a court festival at the manor house or the castle that the townspeople are invited to. And so it's kind of fun.
Well, and it allows this, in a sense, this experience of what we might think of as kind of luxury of
exactly
putting on the Ritz musically and otherwise.
Exactly.
You brought a number of interesting things with you today, including commemorative T-shirts, some old scripts, one of them from the second year of the Ye Olde English Christmas Feast, a couple of newspaper articles, a wonderful photograph of you with your young daughter, 2 years old at the time, at your knee. And you brought, this is what I want to just take a moment to talk about, you brought several really substantial tankards with you. And you were saying that back in the day, for instance, this one that I'm just holding is from 1985, that these were a gesture of appreciation for the adult volunteers,
right,
who were part of this. Say a word about the enormous difference which they made then right through to the present day. I mean, who are we talking about that we never see in the spotlight, but without whom none of this could really happen?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. The thing that immediately springs to mind are the costume ladies. They make costumes. They start in September, and maybe they work all 12 months. I don't know, but they but they make adjustments to the costumes and make new costumes. They repair costumes. In the first year, in 1975, it was my wife and a neighbor lady, Judy Hockney, and they made all the costumes for everybody except the Magic.